What might a collision with a debt ceiling sound like? I'm David Brancaccio. Government shutdown averted, as you've been hearing, but the ship of state is still headed for a collision with what's called the debt ceiling, a limit Congress imposes on how much the feds can borrow. That could happen on or around the 18th of this new month, and whether or not lawmakers allow this to happen, there are already effects in the markets. Christopher Lowe is chief economist at FHN Financial in New York, where he's surrounded by people who trade bonds. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, David.
We don't know, but as we speak this Friday morning, we are on track to the U.S. government bumping up against the debt ceiling and beginning to default on what it owes in about 18 days. If that happens, I know if it happens, how does it play out in the market?
We've had debt ceiling fights in the past. They always go down to the last minute, and it tends to have a market impact even if it doesn't happen. And we're actually starting to see that right now.
You can see it already in some prices?
Oh, that's right. No, absolutely. There are Treasury bills that mature, you know, a few days after October 18th. And no one wants to own those, because if the fight goes on past the deadline, if the Treasury doesn't pay, well, you don't want to be holding that debt. We're also seeing something going on in the Fed's balance sheet. The Fed, Jay Powell in particular, the chairman, hasn't said anything about what they're willing to do with the debt ceiling. But that said, their balance sheet is shrinking right now. And there are people in the market who think that the Fed might buy up debt.
So wait, the Fed could fix this by buying up some debt that the government can't pay?
The last time there was a debt ceiling fight was 2013. And at the time, it really did go down to the last day. The Fed had a secret meeting by telephone. And on that call, they cooked up this plan where, if necessary, they would buy the debt. They called it something that should be avoided at all costs, and most importantly, something no one could know about, because I guess the thinking was, if Congress finds out we might be able to prevent trouble, then they might not raise the debt ceiling. So all these years later, Powell's being pressed, will you actually invoke the secret plan? And he said, well, now that people know about it, we really can't do it, maybe.
Right. And let's say the Fed did do the secret plan and got us over the hump. It doesn't mean bumping up into the it doesn't mean the default wouldn't exist.
It's the same thing that happens to a household that misses a payment on a credit card. What happens is your interest rates go up. Only in international finance, it's a little more complicated, because you have to convince bond buyers that they're going to get paid in the future. And to do that, you typically have to pay them not a little bit more, but actually a lot more.
Christopher Lowe, Chief Economist, FHN Financial. Thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
The Biden administration last week announced the U.S. will reopen to international air travelers who are fully vaccinated against COVID starting November next month. Now, very strict Australia says it will ease restrictions on its borders, which have been closed for about a year and a half. The parts of the country where more than 80% of people are vaccinated will be first to let travelers come. The BBC's Shama Khalil reports from Sydney.
New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, is set to be the first to open its international borders with a 7-day home quarantine for fully vaccinated travelers. The move will mean an end to hotel quarantine rules, making it easier for thousands of Australians stranded abroad to return home. People entering Australia will have to be vaccinated with a COVID-19 jab approved by the country's medical authorities, but two vaccines from China and India are also set to be accepted for travel. The country's borders were shut in March last year to all non-citizens, with Australian nationals and permanent residents required to seek a government-issued exemption to travel. Those returning from overseas had to go into hotel quarantine for 14 days at their own cost. Major airlines have already warned that they're not prepared for a quick ramping up of services.
Vespa mandarinia. No, that's not an orange motor scooter from Italy. That is the scientific name for giant hornets, originally from Asia, also known as murder hornets. Last year, the first nest made by this invasive insect was identified in the U.S., Washington State. Now more, another three nests since August in Whatcom County, Washington. Reporter Benjamin Payne reports on the race to prevent widespread damage to U.S. agriculture.
It takes a heavy-duty vacuum to suck Asian giant hornets out of their nest. In a video from the Washington State Department of Agriculture, officials can be seen hunched over the base of a rotting alder tree. They're wearing what look like spacesuits. A typical beekeeping suit isn't tough enough to shield from a potentially lethal sting. But while the threat to human life is a real concern,
really, it's not nearly as much of a concern as what they do to both honeybees and kind of wild bees.
That's Bob Peterson, an entomologist at Montana State University.
They can attack a honeybee hive, kill the workers, kill the queen, and then spend the next few days feeding on the immatures, the larvae. And so that is a direct economic consequence that is very troublesome.
Troublesome to American agriculture. According to the USDA, pollinators are responsible for one in every three bites of food we eat, and they increase the country's crop values by more than $15 billion each year. However,
the Asian giant hornet alone is not likely to put those crops in jeopardy, but it does add this compounding effect.
Eric Lee Motter is a conservationist with the Xerces Society, a nonprofit that works to protect pollinators like bees and butterflies. He says that pollinators are under enough stress as it is: climate change, habitat loss, pesticides.
And so to have one more thing tipping the scales against pollinators, it's not a welcome development.
But that tipping point hasn't been reached, at least not yet. Entomologist Bob Peterson again.
We might be able to eradicate this species. There are some things that are going for us.
One being that only the queens can reproduce. The workers are sterile and cannot become queens, unlike some other wasps. Another thing, Peterson says, we're still early on. Only Whatcom County has had to wrestle with this species in the U.S. Not that you'd really want to wrestle with a murder hornet. In Whatcom County, Washington, I'm Benjamin Payne for Marketplace.
Next week, a whistleblower from Facebook who remains unidentified is scheduled to testify in Congress about how the social media platform Instagram, owned by Facebook, could hurt the mental health of young people. Lawmakers began a hearing yesterday where they questioned a Facebook executive about findings from the company's own research. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here. Nova, Facebook got tough questions from Republicans and Democrats yesterday.
Indeed, they did not mince words. The hearing was prompted by a series of Wall Street Journal articles that revealed that Facebook's own research, done a couple of years ago, found some teenage girls suffered harmful mental health effects from using Instagram. And Senator Ed Markey was one of the lawmakers who made this comparison.
Facebook is just like Big Tobacco, pushing a product that they know is harmful to the health of young people, pushing it to them early. Also, Facebook can make money.
Markey has co-authored a bill to tighten rules for kids using social media. Meanwhile, Facebook's global head of safety, Antigone Davis, was the one on the hot seat yesterday testifying via video link. She disagreed with the comparison Markey made, saying Facebook provides value by allowing kids to connect with their friends and family.
Facebook is also taking issue with the reporting about its own research, a lot of it in the Wall Street Journal, which prompted hearings. What are they saying?
Right. Antigone Davis said their internal research has been mischaracterized and that a lot of teens actually told the company that Instagram helps them.
And the most important thing about our research is what we've done with it. We have a long track record of using our internal research, external research, and close collaboration with experts to improve our apps and provide resources for people who use them.
And David, you mentioned the whistleblower. Her identity is to be revealed on 60 Minutes on Sunday, and she's scheduled to testify in Congress next Tuesday.
Tuesday. Nova, thank you. Our digital producer is Redmond Caralipio. Our engineers are Jay Siebold and Jessen Dueler. I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.